Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Right now, it's time for the one, the only, and boy, are we happy about that, Dr. History. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Zeb. How you doing?
I'm good, my friend. Boy, you look kind of spiffy over there with a new striped shirt on.
Well, and it's actually an old one, but...
I didn't want to mention that you had frayed collars and holes at the elbow.
Well, see, when I used to work, I sometimes would leave one of those gel pins in my pocket. Oh. And when that goes to the washer and the dryer, yeah.
Does your wife nag at you like mine does about, take things out of your pocket?
No, she's very kind. She's very...
You're a coward.
You're right. I know who cooks my dinner.
Attaboy. I know who used to.
Yeah.
Okay. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, before we start, I want to say hi to some people that have written comments into the webpage. Karen, Alan, Jim, Marion, William, Michael, Kevin, Joseph. These are people that have taken the time to write comments into my webpage, and I appreciate their input. Yeah, some of them have mentioned things they would like to see on the program or hear about. And so, anyway, I want to thank those that have taken time to do that.
That's nice.
Anyway, so today, Zeb, I needed to start out with a disclaimer.
Uh-oh, I don't like those.
Those with a somewhat of a weak stomach may not want to...
Are you going to do this to me again? You did it a couple of months ago.
I know.
And so, it's right before the lunch hour.
Okay. So I'm going to show you a picture, Zeb.
Oh, good. Okay. I can't hardly.
Okay. Now, see this picture? That's a group of Indians.
It looks like some of the Nez Perce.
Okay. They're not.
They're not.
But,
okay.
But I'm just going to tell you, if these people invite you to dinner, don't go.
Why?
Oh, I'll get to that. I'll get to that.
There's a hook if I ever
I got you now. Okay. You got to hear this.
Right.
Okay, the Tonkawa Indians. All right, that's who we're going to be talking about.
Not Tonka Toy.
No, Tonkawa.
Okay.
They were a small tribe who once claimed part of southeastern Texas as their home. By 1862, their tiny population was erecting grass-thatched huts and teepees along the high plateau which overlooked the valley of the Washita River. Mm. And you've heard of the Washita.
Yep.
So, anyway, 5 years before, in 1857, the government gathered up the Tonkawa along with other small Texas tribes and moved them to the Wichita Reservation near Fort Cobb in Indian Territory, and that's in Oklahoma.
Right.
You've heard of Fort Cobb?
I have.
Okay.
I have.
Now, for several years, there was peace on this reservation on the Washita, but in the late night cold of October 22nd, 1862, that peace and tranquility was shattered.
Uh-oh, what happened?
Well, for one tribe this night, the Tonkawas, what befell them changed their already meager existence forever. And that's what we're going to talk about. So on this night, an explosive attack was carried out by the other tribes on the reservation. Now remember, as I said, they were on this reservation, but some other tribes as well.
Oh, so they had a whole bunch of people that didn't know each other on the same piece of land.
They knew enough.
Oh.
So anyway, it began at the agency, a small group of buildings, which included the commissary, store, and main agency office. When the Indians finished, there were four white men. All agency employees were dead. The buildings were plundered, and the agency burned to the ground.
Hmm.
Now, you know, we've heard of stories where the agencies are holding back food and clothing and stuff for the Indians.
Yeah,
and
that happened to the Apaches.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the tragedy that took place at the agency was bad enough, but was actually only a dress rehearsal for the slaughter that followed.
Oh, my.
Okay? Now, the attacking Indians numbered about 140 men made up of Shawnees, Delawares, Wichitas, Kickapoos, and a scattering of others, and they headed for the nearby Tonkawa camp. Now, the apparent main objective in this night of terror, all these tribes held the same grudge against the Tonkawas. So you had all these other tribes that didn't like the Tonkawas.
What did they do wrong that everybody hated them?
Oh, well, you're, this is the part that...
You keep hooking me on this.
I know. So we'll get to it. Anyway, one group in the attacking force approached the Tonkawa camp from the rear, riding around the camp in a wide circle to avoid detection. Another group concealed itself in the timbered bottomlands below the camp, awaiting the right moment to spring on the Tonkawas. Okay, it was early morning when the attack commenced, and though the first streaks of daylight had not yet begun to spread over the Wichita Hills, the Tonkawa camp, now this was 306 men, women, and children, and they were all asleep.
Yeah.
In their teepees.
Yeah.
Now, the surprise attack was not the only factor working against the Tonkawas. The attackers were mounted and armed with the newest rifles available.
Are the Indians.
Yeah, and these are the other tribes. Now, the Tonkawas, for the most part, had only the bow and arrows. So I'm thinking these other tribes may have stolen guns out of the agency store or whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, under their chief, Placida, however, the Tonkawas quickly rallied to the defense of their camp. They displayed stubborn resistance against the attacking force because they were able to put up such a strong stand despite their inferior defensive position. A number of the Tonka women and children were able to escape. So you can figure of 300 people, maybe only a third had to be warriors, right?
Yeah.
If that many.
Okay.
So maybe 100 against 140.
Yeah.
Anyway, their fighting ability was not enough to prevent 137 Tonkawas, almost half of their already small population, from being killed.
Mm.
More than 100 of that number were women and children.
Yeah.
Now, the attacking force lost 27 killed and wounded, which was really actually a substantial number considering the competitive edge that they held.
Yeah.
But the loss sustained by the Tonkawas brought them closer to extinction, and it was a blow from which they would never recover. Now, here's what you asked.
Okay.
Why?
Yeah.
Why, when the American Indian had suffered so much at the hands of the white man, would Indian turn against Indian in such a terrible,
would
devastating
way?
Would
you hurry up with your story? I'm wild with anticipation.
I'm playing it out here, Zeb.
I see you are.
Yeah. Anyway, the answer never was given, but historians suggest two primary reasons. The first is because the Tonkawas had for several years prior to 1862 acted as scouts for the whites on expeditions against the other Indian tribes.
Oh.
So there's a pretty good factor right there.
Yeah.
The second reason, and this one is a little more unsettling, is that the Tonkawas were cannibals.
What you talking about, Willis?
And we're going to get into that. That's
they
why I said
cannibals. They ate human beings.
Oh, well, I'll get into a little more detail that you may not like.
Maybe I don't want you to.
So there was a guy named Thomas Batty. He was a Quaker Indian agent during this period, and he thought the cause was this. The cannibalism. He believed the Tonkawas had eaten a couple of Shawnee, and this was the revenge motive of the other Indians. But the appetite for human flesh did not belong exclusively to the Tonkawas. For instance, Cheyenne Indians were able to remove certain taboos by eating the heart of an enemy. Okay.
For all of you, I got to have a disclaimer here. For all of you folks that are sponsors of this program that are in the food business,
just turn it off.
I'm sorry.
Well, so here we go. The Kiowas, who were members of a secret brotherhood, were obligated to eat the heart of the first enemy they killed in battle.
Oh, my gosh.
And incidences of cannibalism among some tribes in Texas prompted missionaries to ask as the first question in confessions, quote, have you eaten human flesh?
And what do they say if they say not yet today?
I don't know. Not hungry yet. So anyway, if some of the cannibalism was practiced by other Indian tribes, why then were the Tonkawas dealt with such a severe thing? One reason is that the Tonkawas were not secretive about their preoccupations of eating human flesh.
Now, they actually advertised
it? They let it be known, you know. But the word cannibalism conjures up some bad feelings in people. I mean, think of the Donner Party and a few other things, you know. It's just, anyway.
Why am I sorry today's Tuesday?
We'll get through it, Zeb. Hang in there. Anyway, but this strange and gruesome practice was not detestable to the Tonkawa world. And it was not merely warriors who ate the heart of a slain enemy. In the Tonkawa tribe, everyone participated in eating enemies who fell into their hands.
Are you talking about a smorgasbord?
Men, women, and children.
Oh!
Come and eat. I told you when I started. Anyway, so some historians believed it was logical for the Tonkawa to eat human flesh given their beliefs about the spirit world. So supposedly there's some kind of a spiritual realm, okay? So by consuming parts of an enemy's body, the cannibal could acquire either some or all of the enemy's power, courage, or fighting ability.
You realize, of course, I'm going to remain quiet for the rest of the program.
That's your only safe out right now, Zeb. Only safety. Well, anyway, to a greater degree, the eating of more than only the enemy's heart was thought to be completely destroy the soul of that enemy, thereby by giving the Tonkawa the greatest victory he could achieve. So, in other words, they're eating them so their spirit or their soul or whatever is, I don't know, lost forever. Okay, whatever the reasons, the Tonkawa cannibalism had a real and lasting effect on other Southern Plains tribes. Now, one man who lived among the Texas tribes for some time, his name was James Mooney. He reported that he heard a number of gruesome tales of the Tonkawas.
You're not going to quit, are you?
Oh, no. I got too much time left here, Zeb.
Spring? Is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. They've designed must-have travel styles for when you need to jet. The lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit makes these shoes some of the most packable styles ever. That means more comfort and less baggage. Take the Superlight Tree Runner on your next adventure. Its cushy, lightweight foam midsole supports every step, and the extra outsole traction gives you the grip to just go for it. The eucalyptus fiber upper adds next-level breathability to keep you going all day. Plus, the Superlight Tree Runner is comfortable and ready to go right out of the box. So, what can you do in a Superlight shoe? What can't you do is the better question. And because they're super packable, the real question is, where are you taking them? Experience how Allbirds redefines comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's ALLBIRDS.com, code SUPER24.
So their cannibalism was not reserved for war prisoners. It was not unlike the Tonkawas to ambush lone Indians from other tribes who might be unlucky enough to wander their way.
Couldn't they have grown potatoes?
Not the same. Anyway, this Mooney goes on. He says, more than one missing person was thus traced to the Tonkawa camp where all clues abruptly ended. Okay, we're not done.
You know, I had a bunch of snide comments to make, but I can't even think of them.
Okay, so the Tonkawas did not discriminate when it came to choosing their dinner. Although it has been reported that they feasted more on Comanches. This is probably because Comanche Indians were more numerous in the area and because there existed a deep hatred between the Tonkawa and Comanche, and the Tonkawas often helped the whites in tracking down hostile Comanches. Okay. All right. Now, here we go. Here's another guy, Noah Southwick, a Texas Ranger.
Yeah.
He witnessed a Tonkawa feast on a Comanche Indian. After killing the captive, a big wash kettle into which they put the Comanche meat together with a lot of corn and potatoes, and he quotes as saying, "The most revolting mass my eyes ever rested on."
He was there?
You're speechless, Evan. So
I got to admit, I own this program, and I don't want to say anything.
Okay, well, I'm not done. So when the stew, was sufficiently cooked and cooled to allow of its being ladled out with the hands, the whole tribe gathered around, dipping it up with their hands and eating. Now, having gorged themselves on this delectable feast, they lay down and slept till night when the entertainment was concluded with what they called the scalp dance.
The what?
Scalp dance.
Scalp dance. Why do I not want you to pursue this?
We'll leave that one, okay?
Okay.
So, now, one early Texas pioneer, a guy named John H. Jenkins, he experienced Tonkawa cannibalism. He describes how the Tonkawa persuaded him to show them the body of a Waco warrior that he had shot. Now, Jenkins described how when they discovered the body, they seemed really excited, really happy, delighted. Well, they cooked and ate this guy that Jenkins had shot. Now, Mooney also tells about a Comanche boy captured by a Lipan Apache Indian. Well, one day the boy disappeared after having been reported seen near a Tonkawa camp. So when you went out for a walk,
you're on your own.
You went out for a walk, do not go near the Tonkawa village.
Holy smokes.
Now, even after the massacre of the Tonkawa that I mentioned in the beginning in 1862, there were reported incidents of their eating human flesh. As late as 1874, Comanches complained that Tonkawa scouts for the United States Army had been found eating dead Comanches. And several years later, a Tonkawa informant told that human flesh tastes like bear meat. I don't, you know. Okay, let me just finish.
We had plans for lunch. You want to make that tomorrow?
Anyway, some historians believe that animosity toward the Tonkawas caused that tribe to retaliate by acting as scouts and guides for the whites. And for self-protection, the Tonkawas became allies of the United States Army. And others believe that the animosity resulted from the expeditions the Tonkawas led. And anyway, whatever the sequence may be, it is clear that cannibalism was not the only reason other tribes tried to eliminate the Tonkawas.
You know, now this is a question that I think I have a right to ask.
Okay.
But how did any tribe or any group of people ever resort to that cannibalism at first, anyway? I mean, what possessed them to do this?
You know what? I'm just going to take God on a limb. I think it's because of famines when there was no food available. And I think maybe that may have been the start. So, but anyway, from 1856 through the summer of 1860, the Tonkawas helped the United States Army and the Texas Rangers in expeditions against the Comanche and other hostile tribes. And in December of 1857, about 20 Tonkawas accompanied the 7th Infantry through an area of Texas occupied by the Kickapoos. Now, the following year, Tonkawa Chief Placido led 100 warriors as scouts against Comanches on the Canadian frontier on the river. And the Comanches, led by a guy named Iron Jacket, were defeated in an attack led by the Tonkawas. So the Tonkawas were doing a lot of help for the U.S. military against these other tribes. So it wasn't just the eating.
Well, didn't the military, our military, have any idea what kind of bad dudes these were?
Well, they were helping them. So, yeah. Anyway, in the summer of 1860, Tonkawa scouts accompanied Texas Rangers in an attack on a Comanche and Kiowa camp on the Canadian River in the Indian Territory Panhandle. According to Texas Ranger James Pike, who took part in that attack, when the fighting was over, the Tonkawa commenced roasting and eating some of the dead Comanche.
Oh, boy, there you go again.
We're almost done, Zeb.
Yeah,
another minute.
Okay.
Anyway, after the Civil War broke out, the white man, whom the Tonkawa had served so loyally, became too involved in their own problems to worry about their Tonkawa allies.
Couldn't somebody just get him a gift card to some country kitchen someplace?
Yeah. But, you know, the white man's protection was gone now, and the way was open for this massacre that happened with the Tonkawas. So by the 1870s, the Tonkawas had become just a shadow of what was once a tribe of some consequence in Texas. By 1944, way later, only 56 Tonkawas remained, and it was a tribe which had the distinction of being the last cannibals in the United States.
You got to be kidding me.
Now, again, you think about, again, I show you this picture.
Those are the Tonkawas.
And these are some Tonkawas. If they invite you to dinner, just don't go.
That one guy is very, very heavy.
Well, this guy is the chief and his wife.
And he ain't no small dude.
No.
And she is not very petite.
Well fed. But, you know, remember the old story of Jeremiah Johnson?
Yeah.
You know, the movie by Robert
Redford. Yeah,
actually, his real name was John Johnson.
Yeah.
And you know what he did after they sent the individual crow warriors.
You realize you're probably getting a lot of cancellations on my schedule of advertisers.
Jeremiah Johnson, John Johnson.
Yeah.
And the name of the book is Liver Eatin' Johnson.
Liver Eatin' Johnson. Let me ask you, though, when you hear stories like this and you pursue supposedly the facts, how much of what's written do you take as maybe being distorted a little bit, and how much do you really kind of solidify as being a fact?
You know, these old magazines that I get, this one is True West from 1984, And
that's only 40 years, basically, after the Tonkawas were, mentioned just a little bit ago.
But it's also, this is by a guy named Richard Stickin, and it says, photos courtesy of the Smithsonian Institute and the National Anthropological Archives. So I give this a pretty good credence as far as reliability.
I want to go back to 1944. You said that what was in 1944?
There was only 44 of
them
left.
Okay, but now 1944, that's only 3 years before I was born.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they had a lot of history, and perhaps at that time, because of the education, et cetera, were writing about some of their grandfathers and even their parents.
Right. So this could be, like say, a second generation storytelling that's been researched. Because it hadn't been that long that they were living among it.
Wow.
And obviously there's got to be great-grandkids in that group that are still living.
And they're still Tonkawas. There has to be.
And that's something I ought to look up and see if they're, what there is.
You better check your neighborhood. Hi, Dr. Turner, you want to come over to eat tonight?
Don't go to the barbecue.
Oh, yeah, the barbecue is a good way to put it. You know, but really there still would be in 1944.
Sure.
I mean, certainly there's going to be relatives.
Well, look at all the others, the Shoshones, the Blackfeet, the Apache, the Cherokee. There's reservations still all over the country with their descendants. So I'm going to guess that, and I'm going to, that makes me curious. I want to see what I can find about the Tonkawas now.
I suppose you're going to say if you find one that lives in this area, you're going to invite him over to be on the program.
I'm going to invite him to your place.
I doubt, seriously.
Thanksgiving dinner.
The door and the key will be lost.
Thanksgiving, Zeb.
No, seriously, but there would be.
There's got to be some left.
Yeah. You ought to do a little bit of checking on that.
I will, because with that many still in 1944, there's got to be some descendants.
That's a gruesome story.
I know, and I looked at that and I thought, should I or shouldn't I? And I
thought, gruesome one over shouldn't.
It did. I thought, you know, I've been saving this for just the right moment, and this was it.
I feel so honored.
You're so lucky.
I'm such a lucky guy. Next week, can we maybe
tone it down a little bit? I think that could be a possibility.
You think so?
Maybe we'll get something really
nice.
Can
we talk about going fishing on a pond in Kansas or something? For
heaven's sakes? A good bank robbery
There you go. Let's go to a good old bank robbery.
All right.
Holy buckets. Dr. History brought to you by, for maybe the last time, A Child's World and also Ambulatory Surgery Center. Thank you very much for your involvement, and a thanks to Dr. History.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.